Hey everybody, welcome back. We are jumping into some really fascinating stuff today. We're looking at Ezekiel chapter 24.
Oh yeah, Ezekiel 24.
Three unforgettable days in Ezekiel's life.
Yes.
We've got the siege of Jerusalem, we've got a deep personal tragedy, and we've got a glimmer of hope amidst chaos.
That's right, and we're going to unpack this with some help from Dr. Leslie Allen.
Yes, his lecture on Ezekiel is just fantastic.
He's really an expert on this.
So let's just dive right in. The chapter kicks off with this very specific date.
Okay.
January 588 BC. Now, I know I'm not a calendar nerd,
right?
But this date is huge.
It is absolutely huge. That's the day that the Babylonian siege of Jerusalem began. It's like a historical earthquake, right?
Yeah.
It marks a turning point for the kingdom of Judah.
Yeah, and this date's actually borrowed from the Book of Two Teens.
That's right, yeah.
Which is just interesting how these biblical texts were kind of woven together over time.
Yeah, just a little peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, like finding a hidden thread connecting different parts of a tapestry.
That's a good way to put it.
But back to that siege. I mean, just trying to grasp the sheer weight of that moment for the people living in Jerusalem. I mean, it must have been terrifying.
Oh, absolutely.
Walls closing and the threat of starvation, constant fear.
Imagine just being trapped within those city walls and seeing the enemy forces closing in. Just that dread. And then for Ezekiel, you know, this news would have been both devastating and validating.
Yeah.
You know, this is everything he'd been warning people about.
Right, right.
You know, those consequences of turning away from God.
Wow. What a burden to carry, though, right? To know that your words have come true in such a tragic way.
Yeah.
But he doesn't just deliver the news straight.
No.
He uses this really vivid metaphor, the cooking pot, to just drive the point home.
The cooking pot, yeah.
I mean,
one of those biblical images that sticks with you, even if it's a little disturbing.
It is.
He describes the people of Jerusalem as meat and bones.
Right.
Simmering in a pot. And that siege is the fire that's heating everything up.
Yeah.
And to really appreciate this image, we need to think about, you know, bones and marrow in ancient Israel.
Yeah.
They represent strength and vitality, the very essence of life.
So he's saying that they're being stripped of their very essence, their identity.
Exactly.
Like their life force is slowly being drained away.
Yeah. And then there's another detail that's crucial here.
Okay.
The corrosion in the pot. It's not just a random detail.
Yeah.
It symbolizes the bloodshed in Jerusalem.
Okay.
You know, violence so pervasive that it's like a stain you can't wash away.
Wow.
And, you know, in ancient Israel, blood on bare rock, that was a powerful symbol. It represented a violation of the sacred, a crime that demanded atonement.
Wow. So it's not just about the physical destruction of the city.
No.
But the moral corruption that led to this point.
Right.
Makes you wonder what those people trapped inside that cooking pot were thinking and feeling.
Yeah.
It must have been a day just seared into their memories forever.
Unforgettable.
But that's not the only unforgettable day that Ezekiel faces. We'll come back to the siege, but next we're moving on to a day of profound personal loss for the prophet.
Right, yeah.
Sounds good. Okay, so we've got this backdrop of national crisis, you know, the siege of Jerusalem. That whole city is simmering in that metaphorical cooking pot.
Right.
And then Ezekiel gets hit with this deeply personal blow.
Yeah, day two takes us from, you know, that public stage of national tragedy to the intensely private space of personal grief.
Yeah.
Ezekiel's wife, the one who's likely been his companion and support, you know, through years of prophetic ministry.
Right.
She suddenly dies. Can you imagine the shock, the wrenching pain of that loss?
It's hard to even fathom. And yet what happens next is even more baffling.
Yeah.
God tells Ezekiel that he can't mourn publicly.
Right.
I mean, no funeral, no outward expressions of grief.
It seems
so counterintuitive, so cold.
It does, doesn't it? But to understand this, we have to kind of step back and think about the role of mourning rituals in ancient Israelite society.
Okay.
These rituals were incredibly structured and public.
Right.
Funeral-specific clothing, wailing, even cutting one's hair or beard.
So by denying Ezekiel these rituals, God is doing something different.
Right.
But what's the message here? Why this strange command?
Well, Ezekiel's silences, his lack of outward mourning, it becomes a prophetic act, a living parable of what's about to happen to Jerusalem.
Okay.
The idea is that the coming destruction will be so devastating, so shocking, that people will be too stunned to even grieve properly.
Wow.
They'll be numb, paralyzed by the immensity of their loss.
It's like that collective trauma overwhelms their ability to even process individual grief.
Precisely. And, you know, we see this throughout history and in modern times as well.
Yeah.
When a community experiences a massive trauma, you know, war, genocide, natural disaster, sometimes that initial response is a kind of stunned silence.
Right.
The normal rituals of grieving are disrupted, delayed, or even completely absent.
It's a chilling thought, but it also makes Ezekiel's actions that much more powerful.
It does.
He's not just mourning his wife.
Right.
He's embodying the future grief of an entire nation.
And you can bet his fellow exiles notice this strange behavior. They even ask him directly,
yeah,
what does this mean for us?
Right.
This opens the door for Ezekiel to explain, you know, that deeper meaning behind his actions and connect it back to God's message of judgment.
Okay.
It's like his personal tragedy becomes a signpost pointing toward the larger national tragedy that's about to unfold.
It's a stark reminder that even in the midst of personal pain, God can use our experiences, even the difficult ones, for a larger purpose.
Absolutely. And it also highlights the interconnectedness of our lives.
Yeah.
Ezekiel's personal grief is inextricably linked to the fate of his people.
Right.
He's not just an observer. He's a participant, a living embodiment of the nation's suffering.
So we've had a day of national crisis, a day of profound personal loss. What comes next? Where do we go from here?
Well, day three brings a messenger from Jerusalem.
Okay.
And he brings news that confirms Ezekiel's prophetic warnings. The city has fallen.
Oh, wow.
It's the culmination of everything we've been talking about.
So it's a day of confirmation, but also a day of profound sadness.
Yeah.
All those warnings, all those metaphors, they've come to pass in the most devastating way.
They have.
But amidst all that loss, there's this glimmer of a shift in Ezekiel's ministry.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Here's where it gets interesting. God tells Ezekiel, your mouth will be opened.
Okay.
It's like a dam breaking, right? A release of pent-up emotion and prophetic power.
Wow.
Remember, he's been silent, unable to mourn his wife.
Right.
But now his voice returns. And it's not just a voice of lament.
Right.
It's a voice of hope.
So the silence, the judgment, the grief, it's not the final word.
Not at all. This is a turning point.
Okay.
From this moment on, Ezekiel's prophetic ministry shifts from pronouncements of judgment to words of comfort and restoration.
Okay.
He starts to talk about a future where God will gather his scattered people, heal their wounds, and establish a new covenant of peace and hope.
Okay, so it's not a complete happy ending. The destruction has happened. The loss is real, but there's this seed of hope planted.
Yes.
This promise that something new is coming.
Right.
And it's all tied to this moment when Ezekiel's voice is finally unleashed.
It's a powerful image, isn't it?
Yeah.
Makes me think about how sometimes our own deepest pain, our most profound experiences of loss, can become catalysts for growth and transformation.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the breaking open makes space for something new to emerge.
Wow. I'm getting chills just thinking about it, but we've covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah.
Maybe we should pause for a moment, let all this sink in.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to talk about this shift from judgment to hope and what it means for us today. And we're back. All right. So we walk through these three really intense days in Ezekiel's life, you know, national crisis and personal tragedy, and then this glimmer of hope emerging from the ashes. But one thing that really struck me throughout Dr. Allen's lecture is this emphasis on remembering even when the message shifts toward hope and restoration, there's this call to never forget the past. I'm struggling a bit with that. How does remembering, especially the painful stuff, fit with this idea of grace?
Yeah, that's a question that's wrestled with theologians and everyday people for centuries.
Right.
And it really gets to the heart of what both judgment and grace truly mean. It's not about, you know, wallowing in guilt or getting stuck in the shoulda, woulda, coulda of past mistakes.
But it's not like God's keeping score, you know, waiting to punish us for messing up.
Not at all. It's about understanding the weight of our choices.
Okay.
Both individually and collectively. Remembering how our actions and the actions of those who came before us have shaped the world we live in.
Okay.
And then using that knowledge to move forward in a way that honors God and reflects his character.
So it's more about learning from the past than being punished by it.
Exactly.
But how do we, regular people in the 21st century, actually apply this to our lives? I mean, we're not exactly facing exile or seeing our cities burn to the ground.
You know, that's where it gets really interesting, because we all have our own Jerusalem moments, right?
Oh, yeah.
Those times when we've made choices, we regret, when we've experienced loss that feels unbearable. You know, when we've felt the full weight of our own imperfections.
Yeah, those are the days that you can't just erase from your memory.
Exactly. They stick with you. But instead of trying to bury those memories or letting them define us.
Right.
What if we looked at them through this lens of grace and remembrance?
Okay.
What if we ask ourselves, what did I learn from that experience?
Right.
How did I see God working even in the midst of the mess? And how can I use what I learned to make better choices moving forward?
So it's about taking those unforgettable days, those tough moments, and turning them into fuel for growth.
Yeah.
Not letting them break us, but letting them refine us.
Beautifully put. And it's not a one-time thing, right?
Right.
It's a constant process of remembering, reflecting and allowing God's grace to kind of reshape us. It's like, imagine a potter working with clay.
Yeah.
There's molding, there's firing, sometimes even breaking and starting over.
Wow.
But through it all, the potter's hand is guiding the process, shaping something beautiful and purposeful.
I love that analogy. And it makes me think about how Ezekiel himself went through this intense refining process. He faced those unimaginable losses, but he emerged from the fire with a deeper understanding of God's heart and a message of hope for the future.
And that's the heart of it all, isn't it? Even in the midst of judgment, even when we mess up, God's grace is always there offering us a path towards redemption and restoration.
Yeah.
It's not about erasing the past, but about finding meaning in it and allowing it to shape us into the people we were meant to be.
That's a powerful message to end on. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Ezekiel chapter 24, I think the takeaway is this. Don't be afraid to confront your past, the good, the bad, and the unforgivable. But don't get stuck there. Look for those glimmers of grace, those moments where God's love broke through. And let those experiences, along with God's guidance, mold you into something stronger, wiser, and more compassionate. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon with another fascinating journey into the world of knowledge and ideas.